good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe here for our Quarters for Muster every week from the captain's chair. And first, I send greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. And having just dropped my checklist, I'm going to leave you for about 2 seconds. Now I'm back. Checklist retrieved from down under the captain's chair. And greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. And with my best wishes to everyone who is feeling either threatened or feeling a little bit down, hopefully our time together will make you feel just a little bit better about yourself and a little bit better about the world in which we live. Because I'm going to talk today about some military events that have happened just in the last few weeks, or one that is coming up. On the binnacle list, further good news in that many of Captain Joe's people, especially on the Coast Guard channel, are improving, have been following their physician's instructions as to how they should be managing their particular challenge. And it is thus for me to remind everybody that it is flu shot time. It is COVID time to get that fifth shot. If you need to fill in the blanks, go ahead and do that as well. And also, shingles shots are available and pneumonia shots are available. I highly recommend the shingles shots. At least talk it over with your medical care provider to make sure that this is a good thing for you. My mother, whose nickname in the family was Toots, had not had the shingles shots. I'm not even sure that they were available at the time that this happened. But she had shingles inside her ears. It was just a terrible, terrible time, and it was extremely difficult to treat. So check all of these inoculations out with your medical care provider. Obviously, if he or she recommends that you follow a different course, I urge you to consider carefully those recommendations. In other binnacle list news, there have been surgeries successfully accomplished and tests successfully passed. And so the binnacle list for me today shows some signs of improvement. I do not have a magazine this week, but I do have two books. Now, I start my commentary about the books with the statement that I am not a wiki. A wiki in the Coast Guard is someone who is an expert on marine aids to navigation, in particular lighthouses, buoys, beacons, and things like that. And the term comes from the fact that before we had incandescent lights providing the light, and now we have light-emitting diodes. My lighthouse out at Point Robinson has a light-emitting diode, a piece of crappy plastic. And so before we had that, we had lanterns, and many of those lanterns were worked on the same principle as a traditional Coleman lantern. They had a wick. And so even today, Coast Guard people who are experts in this field are wikis. I am not a wiki. I am a ship driver, and I am a user, or was a user, of the product. So the books that I'm recommending this week are two of them that have to do with lighthouses and lighthouse appliances. They complement each other. They are by two different authors. The first one is called The Lighthouse Stevensons, and it is by Bella Bathurst, B-A-T-H-U-R-S-T, Bella Bathurst. The Lighthouse Stevensons built many of the lighthouses in Scotland, and the They are a generation of Stevensons, of whom one was Robert Louis Stevenson, the author of course, Treasure Island. So the Lighthouse Stevensons built a number of lighthouses in extremely difficult circumstances. And the subtitle is The Extraordinary Story of the Building of the Scottish Lighthouses by the Ancestors of Robert Louis Stevenson. Now, most of these lighthouses are still functioning. Most of them still exist. A couple of them had to be demolished and new structures put on the site. But Bella does a wonderful job with this whole story, and she keeps referring frequently to the Fresnel lens and Augustine Fresnel, who invented the Fresnel lens. So that's the second book. It is called A Short Bright Flash. It is by Dr. Teresa Levitt, L-E-V-I-T-T. And she is a historian at Mississippi, Ole Miss. And I became an electronic friend of Dr. Levitt because the first time that I read a review of this, I ordered a number of copies of it for the ship store out at Point Robinson Lighthouse. Because we have a fifth order Fresnel lens. It was the same lens that was installed when the present structure of Point Robinson Light was completed in 1915. And so Teresa calls has as her subtitle, Augustine Fresnel and the Birth of the Modern Lighthouse. Unlike the Lighthouse Stevensons, the copy that I have is a paperback, but unlike that, A Short Bright Flash is beautifully produced. It has it is a hard cover book. It is on very fine, high-quality paper. She illustrates it with wonderful maps and diagrams. The principles of refraction, which is the principle under which the Fresnel lens works, is clearly laid out, and she has done just a wonderful job in the production of this book. I've not done enough research on either of these subjects to question the scholarship. I believe, knowing that Teresa is a professional historian and a lovely person, by the way, to talk to and to correspond with, that her scholarship is of the highest quality, and I have every reason to believe that Bella's book is the same. In any case, I recommend the two of them together. I recommend that you read The Lighthouse Stevensons first, because that begins... and tells the story of the Scottish lighthouses that go all the way back to the 1600s. And in it, she makes frequent reference to the Fresnel lens. And then having had your interest thoroughly developed for learning more, then go to A Short Bright Flash by Dr. Teresa Levitt and... get the story of Augustine and the Fresnel lens. There are thousands of Fresnel lenses still working all over the world, and ours would be capable of working, but the Coast Guard has decided to go with thrift and economy with the light-emitting diode, which, of course, draws down much less electricity than does the incandescent lamps that were used in the lamp changer in the Fresnel lens all the way up until about 1979. So those are my two books for this week, both of them highly recommended, both of them of particular interest to my Wiki listeners on the Coast Guard channel. And so... that leads me to another Coast Guard Channel matter. Last week, I made a mistake. I allow myself one mistake a quarter. I have now used up my allowance for this quarter. And that mistake was this. I talked about the Coast Guard district that took care of the inland rivers in this country. And I called it the second Coast Guard district, which it was when I was on active duty. Alas, since my departure from the Coast Guard from active service, never my departure from the Coast Guard all the way up until I crossed my own bar, the commandants, successive commandants, have made decisions which I probably would not have made were I in the Coast Guard, were I the commandant. And so one of those was to incorporate the 2nd District into the 8th Coast Guard District. So now there is no more a 2nd Coast Guard District, and I thank my friend and colleague on the Coast Guard Channel, Joe Leonard, for bringing that to my attention, and with my thanks for his courteous, gracious, and very respectful correction to the mistake that I had made. We're going to talk about some military things today, and one of the things that we're going to talk about is that the Navy's 247th birthday. The Navy counts its birth on the 13th of October in 1775 with the founding of the Continental Navy. However, by the end of the Revolution, the Navy was allowed to go dormant. So it has a little term of broken service. And during that term of broken service, the Revenue Cutter Service, which is what the Coast Guard was called back in those days, 1790, was our only armed military floating force. But I'll give it to the Navy. 247 years of service to the United States. And although I missed the 13th of October, I wish the happiest of birthdays to all of my colleagues on who proclaim themselves as being the deep water sailors. However, I remind them that my own service in the deep water is equal, and certainly my command service and my command time exceeds most Navy people. And and I also remind them that the Coast Guard, then the Revenue Cutter Service, is the force around which the Navy musters in times of national trouble. And we see that happening to us today. The next thing that is coming up on the 21st of October is Trafalgar Day. On the 21st of October, the Battle of Trafalgar, which Cape Trafalgar is near Gibraltar, and it was on the 21st of October in 1805 that Admiral Lord Nelson and his fleet defeated the combined French and Spanish fleets to be one of the defining, and it was not the end of the Napoleonic Wars, because we still had to have Waterloo, and we still had to send Napoleon to first Elba and then to St. Helena. But in any case, it was the definitive and the definitive sea battle of the Napoleonic Wars. The Battle of Trafalgar has been studied and written about ever since 1805. And my point about it is to point out that it is celebrated every year in the United Kingdom. And each year, on the Sunday closest to the 21st of October, which was this last Sunday, the Sea Cadets, the Sea Cadet Corps, has a big parade in the vicinity of Trafalgar Square. I was in London not too long ago, a few days ago, a couple weeks ago, and saw the, not only did I see the monument, it is it is topped with a gold figure at the top, freshly gold leafed. It is, I love it. I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful monument. It has all sorts of Victorian frills around it, but it is a thing of beauty. And so the Sea Cadets parade every year, and they did this last Sunday, and also I was able to go and visit Admiral Lord Nelson, Admiral Viscount Nelson, in his sarcophagus in the crypt at St. Paul's Cathedral. So if it had not been for the Battle of Trafalgar and Waterloo and the ending of the Napoleonic Wars, and if Napoleon had conquered all of Europe, which was his intent, then we would have had a somewhat different political landscape than what we have today. So Trafalgar Day coming up, 21 October, and it celebrates the Battle of Trafalgar, 21 October, 1805. If you haven't ever been to the changing of the guard at Arlington Cemetery, I recommend that you add it to the list of places that you need to go and to see. It is a highly, highly disciplined ceremony. Whenever I feel a little bit down about where we may be headed in this country, regardless of political stuff, but just sometimes I just feel that we're, sometimes I get even a little bit depressed about my own service and things that I see going on there. I certainly get unhappy about things that I see happening in the Navy in the last 4 or 5 years. And I've commented on those things on this program. But every now and then I go onto YouTube. Yes, I know. I look at YouTube. I go onto YouTube and I call up one of the changing of the guard ceremonies. And I always am struck by the way that those young men and women, yes, there are women who are guardians of the tomb. And it is a sign and our symbol of the strength of our national personality, even though sometimes it appears that we are wavering in one direction or another. The only person who shows up with a rank insignia is the sergeant of the guard or the corporal of the guard, whoever is actually mustering the guard. All of the guards who actually march back and forth in front of the Tomb of the Unknowns wear no rank insignia. And the reason for this is that because we don't know who is inside the tomb, either the tomb from the First World War or for the Second World War or for Vietnam, we don't know the rank of those people that are in those tombs. So the guards who actually march in front of the tomb wear no rank insignia. So we don't know whether they are a corporal or a sergeant or what grade of sergeant. We just know that they have volunteered for this work, that they are highly trained, highly skilled, highly motivated, and they are the best of our young people. And if you've never seen it and you don't think that you'll ever be able to go to Washington, D.C., go on to YouTube and watch it, because it is just a great, great ceremony. While I was waltzing around through YouTube, I also saw a play of the funeral procession for Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. Now, I've talked about that one before, but what I had not seen was the procession in which the young enlisted sailors from the Royal Navy pulled the gun carriage on which the Queen's coffin lay. And before the sailors from the Royal Navy appeared with the pulling the gun carriage. There were a procession of all sorts of dignitaries. And what I was struck by was that there were a couple of retired admirals of the fleet of the Royal Navy. And they were having a hard time with this long walk. But by golly, they were going to be on that quarterdeck. They were going to march. One of these, at least one that I saw, had a cane. But nobody, no minder with him. And as straight as they could get themselves up, wearing full uniform, full dress uniform with medals and large medals and with swords. And they were there to do final honor to their sovereign. And I was just touched by the strength that these people showed, these officers. Some of them had to have been in their 80s, but by God, they were going to do it. And they all did. And it was a reminder to me that what we saw over the years with Her Majesty the Queen and what we saw with these people who were marching in the procession to do her final honor was the importance of duty. Importance of duty to your shipmate, duty to your ship, duty to your leaders, duty and obedience to those that have been placed in authority over you. And I saw it once again with that procession. On the 10th of October was Fiji Independence Day. And I bring up the Fiji Independence Day because the military in Fiji has a very distinctive uniform. They most of them wear a fiery red tunic, and instead of battle dress trousers, they wear a white skirt with a scalloped bottom, and they all wear sandals, and they march in these sandals, and they have a distinctive marching pace for part of the review. So the occasion for this was Fiji Independence Day. They were marking 75 years, I think, of independence from the United Kingdom. And my first notice of the Fijis was the Fiji Battalion in the first of the Edinburgh military tattoos that I ever saw many, many years ago. And the Fiji Battalion was there to be a part of that particular tattoo. Once again, if you're looking for a place to go before you cross your own bar, go to Edinburgh when they're having the military tattoo. There are military tattoos in other places all over the world, but the original and the best one is the one at Edinburgh Castle. And the last piece of every time is the Lone Piper up on the ramparts of Edinburgh Castle. See it if you can. And then finally, on the 11th of July, which is Bastille Day, once again, here I was waltzing around through YouTube, and I saw the parade. And I always look for my favorite French military organization, and that's the Foreign Legion. This year, the Foreign Legion brought up the stern, the rear of their parade. They were the last of the marching units. Once they appeared, they started marching at their own. They have a particular marching pace, which is different from every other unit that I'm aware of. And they always are preceded. The first unit is always the pioneers. The pioneers with their leather tunics. And instead of any kind of a weapon, they carry an axe over their right shoulder. And then followed by the following the pioneers is the band, and following them is the armed unit, and all of them wearing the kepi blanc, the white kepi, the only French unit that is allowed to wear a white one. And the acquisition, the earning of the white kepi, is a great honor for each one of those legionnaires. So add them to my list of military units that I trawled to. I was up pretty late last night. Just was fascinated as I went from one military unit to another. So a quick piece of unhappy news. There will be no Alaska snow crab this year. The Fish and Wildlife Service and Alaska authorities have shut down the season because something like 80% of the snow crab have apparently disappeared. Where did they all go? There's an investigation going on right now to try to figure all of that out. But if you're going to go to your favorite supplier of seafood and you want Alaska snow crab, you're not going to get any this year. And does that mean that that's also going to happen with the king crab? I don't know the answer to that, but should I find the answer to that, I will let you know. And I've got the last thing that I have to say, because I am once again up onto my closing minute, is that another aircraft carrier has come up with contaminated water. The USS Abraham Lincoln has now added to the woes that the Navy has had over drinking water, potable water. And I don't know the cause of this one, whether there was some cross-connection problem, but this is sure a sad commentary on the people in the Navy who take care of such things as fresh and proper drinking water for Navy personnel aboard ship and up in Red Hill. So I've come once again far too quickly to the end of my time together. This is, as always, your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair, and I want everybody to, we never say goodbye, we always say until we meet again. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly and urging all hands to consider all of those inoculations that I am advocating for from the captain's chair. So I will see you next week. Everybody take care of those for whom you are responsible, and we'll talk again in just 1 week right here from the captain's chair.